The Jericho Network on Westwood One.
Okay, people, tomorrow morning, 10 a.m., Santa's coming to town.
Santa! Oh, my God!
Santa here? I know him. I know him.
Ho, 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 ho. Merry Christmas. Or is it, yeah, ooh, yeah, Merry Christmas.
People!
That's what we got today. We're talking all about Kiss because Santa has filled our stockings with some killer rock and roll conversation. Talking all about Kiss.
You want some more?
With myself, Fozzie drummer Frank Fonseret, Fozzie guitar player Rich Ward, and the drummer from Luke Bryan's band, Kent Slucher, who are huge, huge Kiss fans. The four of us spent this whole podcast trying to convert Rich to the Kiss camp. This happened actually before the Kiss cruise, and I can honestly tell you that Rich is now part of the Kiss army, completely 100%. But beforehand, as he grew up, as you'll hear, he wasn't. So it's Frank, Chris, and Kent versus Rich talking all about Kiss on this Merry Kissmas. Hope you guys got everything you wanted from Santa Claus. Hope you got everything you wanted from me for over the last year with Talk is Jericho. We're getting even bigger, rolling hard, getting bigger and better guests, doing bigger and better shows, and that's all thanks to you. Now, thanks to you for listening, and thanks to you for subscribing on iTunes if you haven't, because subscribing helps us so much, helps me so much, and the 5-star ratings and comments that you leave help Talk is Jericho even more. So please take a minute to support this show by subscribing at iTunes and leaving us a 5-star rating if you think we deserve one. I think we do. I think I work my ass off to bring you 5-star shows every episode. Not all of them are 5 stars, but some that I expected wouldn't be are, some I expected would be aren't, but I work hard every single time to bring you the best guests and the best shows that I can. So give me a 5-star rating and leave some comments, okay? I love to hear your feedback. Fire away. Say everything you want to say. Let the world know how much you love Talk is Jericho. Now, if you're looking for a New Year's resolution or maybe trying to decide what to spend some of that Christmas cash on, let me make a suggestion that can literally change your life. Change mine. Get yourself DDP Yoga, okay? Diamond Dallas Page's DDP Yoga program changed my life. It actually saved both my wrestling and music careers. I've told you so many times about it, but even better. Now, DDP has just introduced his brand new app, all right? It's DDPY Now. That's the name of the app. Living a healthier lifestyle and getting in better shape just got a whole lot easier and a whole lot more convenient. If you want to see the power of DDP Yoga, just go to ddpyoga.com/Jericho and check out Jared's video, okay? His story is unbelievable. He lost 313 pounds in 17 months. That's crazy. That's uncanny. He documented it in pictures and with journal entries, and then he put all that together in a video, okay? DDP Yoga changed his life, and it can change yours as well. Just download the DDPY Now app and give it a shot. This app has everything you need. It's got exclusive live workouts with Diamond Dallas Page from the DDP Yoga Performance Center. It's got an expanding archive of workouts for you to choose from. It's got nutrition guides, recipes, live cooking shows, everything you need to get in the best shape of your life. And the app has Bluetooth heart rate monitor compatibility and detailed interactive fitness tracking to keep you motivated to reach your goals. You can even earn points within the app to redeem for special awards. Dallas, once again, has thought of everything. He's ahead of the curve. He's taken things even further than he has before to get you in the best shape of your life once again. And of course, you can get the DDPY Now app for iPhones, Androids, and on the web. If you buy the DDP Yoga program, though, at ddpyoga.com/Jericho, you'll get this, 3 free months of the DDPY Now app. 3 free months of this app. What are you waiting for? Go to ddpyoga.com/Jericho now. Take advantage of this great offer. It's a great Christmas gift for somebody in your life who needs to get in better shape. DDP Yoga has changed tens of thousands of lives, including mine. This is not just a corporate shill. This is not just me reading words off a page. I can tell you beyond a shadow of a doubt, 100% legit, this has changed my life and made me a better person in this day and age. You can join me. You can get in the shape of your life. ddpyoga.com/Jericho and get started today. Go do it now.
I got one night to spend with you. and I'm going to make you scream.
The following program is a PodcastOne.com production.
He's a world champion wrestler, best-selling author, actor, and lead singer of Fozzy. Now he's rocking the podcast world.
Fragile. It must be Italian.
This is Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, starring Chris Jericho.
Welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the Pod of Thunder and Rock and Roll. Merry Christmas. The People's Podcast has arrived. The Remedy for Boredom is here. And even though it's Christmas, it's still Friday. All right, and on this Friday, on this Christmas, I want to tell you Merry Kissmas, as we're talking all about Kiss, and it starts now.
God gave rock and roll to you!
All right, we are here in Nashville, upstairs in the Cannery, the famous venue, and we are going to have the first inaugural Kiss cast with major Kiss fans. We got Frank Fonseret, drummer of Fozzy, is here. Sure. We've got Luke Bryan, drummer, Kent Slucher. Yes. I never actually asked you how you pronounce your last name.
It's actually, you're the closest person ever. Slucher.
Slucher.
You couldn't be much closer, yeah.
All right, Slucher. Okay, Kent Slucher's here, big, big Kiss fans. But then, the other side of the coin, growing up as not so much of a Kiss fan, the rock snob Rich Ward is with us.
Rock snob Rich Ward checking in for duty, sir.
So we came up with this idea because Frank and I and Kent are all really big Kiss fans. There's a lot of info and detail and trivia and a lot of stuff that gets passed around whenever we talk. How old were you, Frank, when you first remember seeing Kiss or hearing about Kiss?
I remember seeing Kiss for the first time on Halloween night of 1976.
With Paul Lynde?
Paul Lynde Halloween special. That was my introduction, yes.
And nobody knew that Paul Lynde was gay. That's the funny thing.
You'd have to be pretty dense not to know it.
So yeah. What did you think when you saw this? Like, when you see these four guys?
Changed my life, you know?
But in what way? Why?
It was one of those things, you know, I was a little kid and I had gone trick-or-treating and I came home and I was digging into my bag of candy in front of the TV, flipping through the three channels that were available, and I came across Paul Lynde's Halloween special, and that looked interesting. And I think I might have heard of Kiss, but didn't really know what they were about.
Because that was early on, 1975, right?
It was 76.
76.
It was Halloween 76. And luckily, I turned it on like right before, you know, they were coming on as "Ladies and Gentlemen, Kiss." You know, that kind of, and they had the set, and they came down like in this elevator, and came out of the elevator, and started playing Detroit Rock City, and I was just like, I was just mesmerized. You know, it was just like nothing I'd ever seen. I mean, I was just in they just cast a spell, and I was hooked. You know,
wasn't Margaret Hamilton on that?
The
Witch of the West from
yes,
Wizard of Oz,
and Witchy Pooh from the Witchy Pooh from H&R Puff and Stuff.
Yeah. I remember that show.
Oh yeah. Boy!
So Kent, what about your first Kiss experience that you can recall?
Mine was more of a Sonic type introduction. I remember being 3 years old, and my cousin had their records, and I remember listening to. Actually, my first introduction musically was Alive 2,
mm-hmm.
And it blew me away. Even at that age, I remember wearing my mother and father and my aunt and uncle out listening to it. And I remember opening up, of course, the Alive 2 record and seeing the end. You know,
that was the thing. You open up that gatefold,
Bigger Than Life,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's the coolest picture of like all the flames and the fire and the stairs and the platforms. You just open that up. And
it was massive. I said that was Bigger Than Life, and it took me. By storm, literally.
I mean, all these years later, if you've never seen that gatefold, if you showed it to somebody now, they would go, wow.
Yeah. There's pyro not like that today.
Yeah, you know, totally. Now, Rich, what about your first Kiss memory?
Okay, so...
If you can remember that far back.
Oh, I definitely can. My cells are well intact. So here's my Kiss story. I went to a school that was one of those charter schools that you know, we were on the kind of lottery system to see if we could get in. It was like a traditional school, just reading, writing, and arithmetic. But the catch was your parents had to drive you to school because buses wouldn't bus all the way to that school. So we carpooled with this girl. Her name was Monica Munn. and she had dark hair, and she was the most beautiful girl I had ever seen. And I was in third grade. Now, Monica Munn was obsessed with Kiss, and I had never heard of Kiss because my exposure to music was the Grease soundtrack, Saturday Night Fever. Like, I was into the music that my parents exposed me to, which was all G-rated. You know, right, it was right, always, right. like, funneled to me, like, Gordon Lightfoot, you know, like...
Which is all great stuff.
Of course it was. But it was, everything was sieved out that was dangerous for me at that point. And Monica Munn had a Kiss newsletter that she used to print herself. She was obsessed with Kiss.
Wow.
She had all the dolls. We used to bring the records to school. And I loved Monica so. So my first crush ever in third grade. And because she loved Kiss, I shunned them because they took all of her attention and all of her
Ooh.
Love and praise.
It all comes out.
Yes.
I never knew this.
And
I never knew it.
And it's so funny because I told this story in like a little blog post a few years ago on the internet, and she contacted me. She lives in Germany. And she goes, because I basically, one of the lines I said that she was so annoying about her love for Kiss that it drove me away from them at an early age. And her only line back was, I did a Google search and saw my name came up. Was I that annoying? And it's like, no, you don't understand. The mind of a third grader, you know, who has this crush on this girl who thinks Paul Stanley is the only thing in the world.
Right.
So that was my first exposure to Kiss.
That's awesome.
It was amazing, yeah.
And that kind of warped your opinion about Kiss right off the bat.
It did, until the 80s, when all of us were like sieves for everything rock mm-hmm. and metal. Mm-hmm. And this was when Lick It Up came out, and that was a big hit on the radio. And I saw Kiss on the Lick It Up tour, I saw Kiss on Animalize tour, and I thought Kiss was one of the greatest bands ever in that era, because I was 12, 13,
right,
whatever,
right.
And that was my age of, I love Crocus, I love Helix, I love
you loved all those bands.
Yeah. Anything, right. Like, and Kiss was like one of the best of all of the bands of that era.
See, and for me, that's when I got into Kiss, was 80s Kiss, because I used to hang out with Colin and Craig Swanston. They were a couple years older than me. Even Colin babysat me a few times. And I was a big Beatles freak. But Colin more specific, was a huge Kiss freak. So whenever we'd go over for Dungeons & Dragons, they'd be talking about Kiss. I'd be talking about the Beatles. And I remember seeing the cover of Alive 2, which you talked about, with Gene Simmons just sitting. It looks like a big, fat, bloated worm with like this blood coming out. And I was like, that's just stupid. Like, sweaty. Like, that's dumb. I was into Paul McCartney with the bowl cut and like... early 60s Beatles, too. I didn't like hippie Beatles because they had beards and mustaches. So I didn't really dig Kiss because they just looked different from what I liked, which was this clean-cut band. Meanwhile, I'm sure the Beatles were probably one of the worst bands ever as far as drugs and alcohol and right. banging groupies and stuff. And, of course, Kiss is completely directed from the Beatles. But I didn't catch into Kiss until the 80s when I finally made the switch and saw Heavens on Fire and thought, well, these guys look much cooler without the makeup. And that fat, bloated guy's not in the band anymore, not realizing that Gene was the guy.
Right.
What's
know?
Funny is he was skinny as a rail back then when you say you saw the
yeah.
picture where he's fat and bloated.
He just looked that way in the picture, though,
yeah.
right?
With the blue light on his face and
yeah,
stuff.
Just the,
and,
yeah, just the expression and everything.
Yeah.
And that was because he was also a normal weight, where in the 70s, everyone was like on cocaine and they were
yeah.
so coked out,
clean,
skinny.
Yeah.
That's right. Everyone looked like Rod Stewart and had no legs. It looks like stilts.
Yeah. So, Frank, I mean, we always laugh about how you can remember everything. But tell us about something like what you saw Kiss on the Paul Lynde show.
Right.
Then where did it go from there where you became like a massive Kiss freak?
I saw him on the Paul Lynde show and I freaked out. And my mom saw me freak out. And she made the mistake of indulging in that. The next day, as a surprise, she saw them on the cover of a Hit Parader magazine and bought it for me and brought it home. And, you know, I was just bouncing off the walls. I thought it was the greatest thing ever. And I remember her face when she gave me that magazine, how I reacted. She kind of had buyer's remorse, like, oh, God, what have I done?
Created a monster.
Yeah, yeah, I've created a monster. And so from there, you know, I read all the magazines I could, you know, anything I saw with them on it. And I remember it wasn't but maybe a year and a couple of months later that they actually came to town, because subsequently, I remember now that I had seen a full-page ad in a newspaper for they played Atlanta Stadium in August of 76. And I remember seeing that ad because I remember now that I'd kind of heard of Kiss and I just saw this weird picture of this weird group and, mm-hmm. you know. And it hadn't clicked for me then until I actually saw them on TV. And so the next time they came to town was December 30th, 1977, and that was my first concert.
Can you be more exact?
Unbelievable.
At 7 p.m.?
I can probably even remember what seat who
opened?
I was
sitting. You remember who opened?
Who was the opening band?
The opening band was Piper, which was Billy Squire's band. Billy Squire
wow,
was the
I am
lead
impressed.
Singer for a band called Piper.
Billy Squire sings open. The Stroke and Everybody Wants Some.
He blew the keyboard player before the show.
So I was in elementary school, and I had a good friend in elementary school named Michael Zalvis, who was the only other kid in our class who was into Kiss. We were both obsessed with them. And when I found out they were coming, and my mom bought tickets, and the tickets were $7.50.
Wow.
They were $7.50. And
to see Kiss
to see
and
Kiss
Piper.
And Piper at the Omni. In Atlanta, and my mom and dad took the two of us, and we sat there, my mom on one side, my dad on the other, he and I in the middle, just, you know.
So what can you, like, everybody remembers certain things about those moments, like, what specific memories do you have of that show?
I remember it was the first time I'd ever been in a big crowd, for one thing, and it was scary, because I was a little kid, and these were all, you know, right, you know, now they just look like scraggly teenagers, but they were these giant people.
Right, they're teenagers.
Yeah, they're teenagers. So they're these giant, tall people in denim jackets and bell bottoms and long, scraggly hair and beards and walking around. I mean, you know.
Basically, a attendance of a concert in this day and age.
Exactly, yeah. It's all come back around. Yeah. And, you know, sold out arena. And like I said, I'd never been in a crowd like that before. And I'm this little kid with my little poster board that I used a magic
marker
to make my sign. Yeah, exactly.
What did the sign say?
Oh, God. Kiss, probably. Yeah.
Piper.
Yeah. But, and it was the first time I'd ever been in an arena. And I think the thing I remember the most was, first of all, it was before you could, it was when you could smoke in an arena. So literally, like, the top 20 feet of the ceiling was just a cloud of smoke drifting up and collecting in the ceiling.
Probably a lot of weed smoke,
too. Oh, yeah, yeah, a lot of weed. And people throw...
Oh, yeah.
The one thing that was really struck me was, here's this arena full of people, and we walked in, and there were probably 30 or 40 Frisbees flying through the air.
People I remember people used to throw Frisbees at concerts. I remember that. Beach balls, too, was a big one.
Frisbees, rolls of toilet paper. I mean, it's just like... People would just sit there and throw things, you know, to entertain themselves.
But like harmless things, yeah, like it wouldn't be like they're throwing rocks or something.
Right.
Like
well,
that.
Some people like they. I remember that first concert between sets. Somebody came out on stage and warned the audience that if they didn't stop throwing like M80s, because people would like light firecrackers and M80s and things like that and throw them.
Oh boy, and, the '70s.
Yeah, the '70s, man. And somebody had said, if it doesn't stop, you know, the show won't go on, you know. And just stuff like that. I mean, I miss that whole kind of atmosphere of just that craziness and chaos.
And not just
know?
For Kiss, for concerts
for
back
anybody.
Then. It was an event. Like, you'd go and, like, is everyone going to the show? And you'd meet, like, at the Sev and take the bus down together and everyone would go hang out. And you had to have money to buy your merch. And another thing, too, is you had to get there on time to see Piper.
Yeah, exactly.
Like now, people just show up for, you know, the headlining band, but then you wanted to see everybody.
Absolutely.
You know, did you read the same?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I remember it was 83. I saw Night Ranger opened up for Kiss on the Creatures tour. And I, oddly enough, became friends with Kelly Kagi.
The drummer.
Drummer from Night Ranger down the line, and he told me a story about that tour, how Kiss fans hated Night Ranger. And he was telling me, speaking of people throwing things on stage, you told me Jack Blades was down on the ground doing the Jack Blades thing, just rocking out. And he said this loud noise happened right next to him, and he looked over, and there was a spike ball, like a metal, big metal spike ball that landed up on stage and went into the stage.
Like a nail bomb or something?
I don't know what it was. No, it was like this big metal.
Like a medieval
looking ball.
Well, let's go ahead for the Dungeons & Dragons freaks. That would be a flail
or a mace.
Yeah.
A mace
indeed.
Or a flail.
Someone was just missed him, apparently, by not far at all, and it would have killed him had it hit him
in
the head.
How much do you have to hate an opening band to want to kill them?
That's terrible.
You know, who brings a mace to
He told
a
me
concert?
That.
And
how do you
band,
get it in?
Like, you can still rock in America. How can you hate that?
That you right. know what? And yeah, they were supporting their first. Yeah, the
and he they, played guitar for Ozzy for the extra
Brad Gillis,
going
yeah.
to Metal Hell bonus.
That's
points.
Right. That's right.
You know, it's funny though. We talk about how those days used to be like that with the big event, and Kiss concerts were always an event because they did something that no one had ever done before. But can you imagine how it must have been for them? And you probably even guys know stories, and if you do tell how it was when they first started, people must have been laughing.
Oh, yeah.
At how stupid this was. Like, these guys wearing clown costumes and big boots, and nobody had ever seen anything like that before, and that's kind of what made them so huge and so popular.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that was kind of it for me, too. Going back, is that secretly, when I wanted to find out what Monica Munn's obsession was about, so she let me borrow, and I can't remember the name of the album. What was the one with the four live pictures on the cover?
That's Alive 2.
Okay, Alive 2. So I borrowed Alive 2, and I remember, like, Gene's picture on that cover is so evil looking.
Yeah. That's what I'm talking about, the bloated, the worm. Big worm with the blood and just sweat and just looks so evil.
And then I played it, and the record really wasn't scary. It was like... like really cool rock and roll, and it wasn't scary at all. And I
happy thought, in some
yeah,
in
and
some
I
ways.
Thought there was like a real disconnect from my kid's vision of how dark and sinister this band looked, and then their music wasn't, which is why I guess there was such a backlash, you know, from like the church and parents. They were looking at the band and not listening because the
right.
band was just
right.
good rock
a
and roll.
Party
it was
band,
the next
you know,
evolution
yeah.
of the Rolling Stones, mm-hmm. and yet if you looked at Gene Simmons. The parents didn't want you. That's why my parents, look, one look at the poster. No, not right. my kid. You know, right. Dan Fogelberg for you.
Yeah, I remember the rumors that Kiss stand for Knights and Satan Service?
Yeah, or Kings and Satan Service. Or
yeah. Oh, whatever it was.
Whatever it was. Yeah, I used to, you know, I had Kiss posters all over my walls. I had the classic huge, like, double-sized poster from, like, the Alive era. And I used to have friends come over, and they would see my walls and just be in shock and be like, my parents would kill me if I tried to put a poster like that on my wall.
Yeah.
And I could never understand that, you know? It's like, because my parents were real live and let live. They didn't care.
Mine
you know,
were very all, supportive as
yeah,
well. Yeah,
they didn't care. You know, they didn't get it, but, you know, yeah. they didn't think anything
yours,
of it.
How about yours, Chris? Did your parents push back on some rock music and stuff?
Well, the thing for me is, don't forget, I was the parents' dream kid because I loved the Beatles. I didn't care about any other band but the Beatles until I was probably 11 or 12. And then I remember when I bought Number of the Beast, my mom asked me a question, like, what is this? And I said, well, it's just a dream. You know, 666, the Number of the Beast, it's a dream that a guy has about, you know, the satanic cult. But she never cared when I liked the Beatles because it's the Beatles, squeaky clean, and the worst, you know, of course, they're all on acid and stuff, but that didn't matter. But the whole Kiss thing, I think, it freaked parents out because they hadn't seen it before, you know, and you had these guys. Another thing about Kiss, too, that I think was really interesting is they modeled themselves after the Beatles, and they're the only band that I can think of to this day where there was four distinct characters, and you knew them all, John, Paul, George, Ringo. You know, Paul, Gene, Ace, and Peter.
You could almost really kind of say that, the same for Queen to a degree.
I disagree. No one knows who the hell John Deacon is.
Except for if you're a fan of his
if
short
you're a
choices.
Fan. Yeah.
Yes. But even if you're not a fan of Kiss the Beatles, you know
no,
the four
yeah.
faces.
You know absolutely, the character,
yeah.
too.
The
yeah,
characters,
yeah.
right.
And
now.
John Deacon wasn't a prevalent voice on the records
exactly.
either. Like,
that's another point.
Ace
yeah.
and Peter were like voices yeah. on the yeah. record, right?
Everybody
even Roger
sings.
Taylor. You heard Roger yeah. Taylor, the harmonies and stuff.
Right,
so,
but
yeah.
in Kiss, everybody sang.
Right.
Yeah.
That's
exactly.
why I said to some degree. Not
right, of course. Yeah. Once again, I'm right and you're wrong.
Right.
So anyways...
It's your last chance to get great holiday savings at Guitar Center. Like a Yamaha portable keyboard, only $79. Add a month of lessons for only $99. Plus the newest and hottest guitars, drums, keys, and more. Exclusive gear you can't get anywhere else. Special financing and gift cards, the perfect present for every musician. So hurry in and find your sound at Guitar Center. Lessons available at select locations only.
How about from a drumming standpoint, Frank? Was Peter Criss an influence on you? Were you wanting to be a drummer that young?
You know, it's funny, because when I first saw Kiss and I first, you know, they first attracted me, I was always kind of a Paul guy. And actually, like, Paul and Ace were my two favorite members. And so my first thing I wanted was a guitar. And I got a guitar for, I believe, either my birthday or Christmas or something. And I didn't take to it. It might have been my teacher, too. I had this, like, old man teacher who, like, was really a purist and really kind of an old kind of jazz guy.
Play your scales.
Yeah. Oh, dude. He used to tell me, he would say, you've got to build up calluses on your fingers. So I would be like, he would teach me a chord, and I'd put my fingers on the strings to fret this chord. And he would be like, you got to really press down. And he would take his thumb and, like, push it on my and, like, press it down on the string to where I was going, ah! You know? And I'm like, this is supposed to be fun. And he had, like, a Google eye. He had, like, a glass eye that would roll around.
Oh,
and
my stuff. God. It's like the girl Carrie's father that left the house.
Yes, exactly. I mean, dude.
And what you don't know what happened is that he used to play in a rock band, and a string broke and poked out his eye, so you could never play rock and roll.
Yeah.
You got to wear your wellies if you're going to play a guitar.
Yeah, so, I mean, I didn't relate to this guy at all, and I was like, this isn't any fun. And seeing that poster that I was talking about, seeing Peter sitting behind this huge drum kit, it almost looked like he was sitting behind, like, the console of a spaceship or something, like he's on the Star Trek Enterprise or something. And so that was, I gave the guitar back and asked for a drum kit, and my mom said, well, you didn't really take to the guitar. I don't think we'll buy a whole drum kit. We'll just buy you a drum and see how that works out. So they just bought me a snare drum and a little stand and a pair of sticks, and that was another we've created a monster moment, because I just took to it like crazy.
Bad news was you couldn't play any Kiss songs. Good news is you played Little Drummer Boy like a mofo.
Yeah. But what's funny is there's pictures, and I have them at home, or my mom has them, of me as a kid sitting down behind one drum, playing the hell out of it with Paul's makeup on.
Which I'm sure just bothers you to this day. You can't sit behind a drum kit with Paul's makeup on, Frank. Shame on you.
And backwards, because I was doing it in a mirror. Yeah. So I did it in a mirror the way I thought it. And then in the pictures, it's like, wait, why is it backwards?
But you can't.
Yeah, I'm a lot like Frank. I was Paul kind of mesmerized me.
He was the star child.
Yeah, totally. The ultimate front man, the flamboyant, great pipes, that cool-looking Ibanez Iceman guitar. You know, and
Kiss
I just
always had cool guitars.
Yeah, but Peter, like as well, you know, I saw him behind this mammoth kit, and I think it just visually caught me.
Mm-hmm. Because nobody had a kit that big.
Yeah. I mean, he was using a huge kit, and what's so awesome is he had one kick drum underneath it.
Yeah, and it said Kiss
like
on
14
it.
Toms and four cymbals in one kick, yeah. And it was. It was bigger than life.
And it had Kiss and glitter on
it.
Peter never played double bass, and he wasn't really much of a rock drummer, so to speak. He had
more of a jazz
swing,
more of a jazz type
feel to it, right?
He had kind of a Krupa type of Gene.
Yeah, big Gene Krupa.
But the cool thing is that Kent, you just got to say hi to Kiss.
I did.
In the Barclays Center. They had a big fashion show thing.
Fashion Week, yeah.
And you got to – it was Kiss and Luke Bryan – and you got to actually talk to Kiss, and you're playing bigger venues than they are.
That's just
how funny
that's
was
ridiculous.
That?
Yeah, I was like, I don't even know what to say. I was like, I was just so
just
taken aback. I'll
say
I'm blessed at that.
You just say, yeah, we're playing somewhere down the street, the Enormo Dome.
Yeah, we're playing that one place. What's it? Philadelphia Eagles Stadium.
Were you guys playing?
It's pretty cool when you meet your childhood musical heroes and you get to tell them, yeah, if you want passes to our show, I'll hook you up.
If I want passes to the stadium show.
Yeah.
They were so kind. I got to spend time with Eric a little bit, but I got to talk to his tech more than anybody, and they were very kind and very welcoming. And
you actually have a Peter Chris tattoo.
I do. I've got the Catman. Oh, wow. And I just got that, ironically, about 2 weeks before I went there. And, the drum tech was like, hey, Eric, why don't you come sign his arm? And they laughed about it and joked.
Well, that's what you say. No, it's for
you, Eric. Yeah, and indeed it was, actually. I'm I love Peter and what he's done. And I think he's amazing at the book of work that he has laid out before us as Kiss fans. But, you know, I'm more of I go back with Eric to Badlands and stuff like that, and with Brian May and all that stuff. And
what about Eric Carr? How did you feel
about
Eric Carr?
Eric Carr's playing. And, you know, live he tended to play everything a little too fast for my liking. He kind of sucked the groove right out of everything.
We were watching the Animal Eyes DVD
insane.
On the bus, and I looked at these guys and I said, oh, my God.
Yeah.
I mean, he is just
taking it to
the
house.
Pocket out of everything. He was just and not only did it start fast, but it just kept going faster and faster. It was crazy.
Bless his heart. Yeah, but the records, I mean, great. I mean, you know, the Elder, you know, he kind of come out and like, who's this guy? But he really got to shine on the Creatures of the Night record.
He brought some real power back to that band because it was in the mid-80s, Kiss had to switch from what Rich was saying, kind of like the fun time vibe. They still had that, but they had to get heavier because heavy metal was the thing.
Yeah.
You know, and they had to kind of keep up with that.
And they were like, they had all the young guns that they were competing with at the time. Exactly. And you could tell that they felt like, we have to be the most energetic, you know, band on stage, and that naturally is going to lead to playing the songs way too
exactly
fast.
Yeah, I mean, Paul was even more moved around more in that era than
ever. Oh, yeah, it was all about energy.
Well, that's Paul's thing. Paul's always been a great front man.
Yeah.
And in always, the 70s, his vocals were cool. In the 80s, that was when he really sang.
Oh,
like, that
man.
Was his best time frame for actual vocals, I would say.
I 100% agree with that. Yeah, you were the one telling me about the... I was kind of complaining. I was like, oh, Hot in the Shade, blah, blah, blah. I was like, I'm not a big fan. He goes, go back and listen to Silver Spoon, all this stuff.
King
go back
Heart,
and listen to all this stuff. And I was like, oh, yeah.
Now, Frank, you dropped out of Kiss in the 80s, though.
After a little while, yeah. Because I was more of a 70s Kiss guy. And, you know, I got into... the last album I bought was Asylum. And no, excuse me. I bought Crazy Nights, and it just did not appeal to me at all.
What didn't you like about it after being such a huge Kiss fan?
I just didn't really feel like the songs were very good. It seemed like they were trying too hard to you know, be this hit maker, you know, this hit band, and you know, I just felt like they'd kind of lost their way. And there was other stuff that was coming up. I got real into thrash at the time. You know, it was the late 80s, and so I was totally into, like, you know. Spreading the Disease, I thought, was probably the greatest
Anthrax
album ever.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, that's all I cared about at the time. So there was a lot of
Kind of became followers in a way.
Yeah, they had
than being the leaders, right?
Yeah, they had pioneered so much, and then they started kind of, you know, aping the bands that had come along in their wake, you know.
Now, Richie, you've recently, you know, I know you went and saw Kiss and you got into it, but for years since we've been a band together, you never really dug what Kiss was doing, or never really, they never appealed to you. What was it that you didn't like?
Well, for me, the problem I think that I had was there is such this hero worship for 70s Kiss, and because when that happened, I really wasn't listening to it.
Mm-hmm.
So when I did start listening to Kiss, I was listening to 80s Kiss, which was a little more refined because it was following what was happening in the industry, where it was like playing the
musically, they were a better band.
They were
a
better band. Like Bruce Kulick, an amazing guitar player. Yeah. The band was just a tighter band, and which like was more appealing to my palate.
Mm-hmm.
Like I was listening to Van Halen, and Kiss and Van Halen were a lot alike in the 80s, and it was still loosey-goosey. It wasn't like by the number super stiff.
Right.
It still had swagger and it still had groove, but at the same time, there was some musicianship that was there that I really liked, and I also really liked the songs. It's funny that what Frank says, like, I don't ever remember a point in my teenage years where I ever differentiated what selling out was or when somebody was making an effort. And I think that was probably because I didn't have enough friends that were talking to me about music. Like, all of my consumption was based on, I mean, I loved Bon Jovi. Like, I didn't start disliking Bon Jovi until I was out of high school, and then I was old enough to say, oh, Guns N' Roses. You know, and, like, you started recognizing that,
Right. Oh, wow,
the only people in a Bon Jovi crowd that, are girls. And then you turn into Tough Guy. Then I started listening to Anthrax and Metallica and stuff like that. But I just spilled some water on myself.
Nice.
But,
and me too.
Yeah, sorry. But I think more than anything, you know, I think Kiss, for me, there was some pushback because I feel like there's a disconnect between all of these amazing guys like Scott Ian and Dimebag who are getting these Ace Frehley tattoos. And I listen through my musician ears,
mm-hmm.
who spends 8 hours a day playing guitar, and wonder why everyone hero worships this guy when you don't have a Van Halen tattoo. You don't have, like, you know what I mean? Like, where's your David Gilmour tattoo? Where's your Billy Gibbons tattoo? Like, there were so many other guys that in my mind were better players, and I think that was part of the thing, was the pushback from me on Kiss. But now,
I think that's right. But I think it's like, you know, I remember watching the show Batman when I was a kid, Burt Ward and Adam West. And I just thought it was the greatest show ever. And when I watch it back, it sucks. Yeah. But at the time, I grew up with it. I worshipped it. I was it. So I'll always think that Batman was a good show. It could be that way with Ace Frehley and 70s Kiss, because those guys were kids at the time and very influenced by them and by the look and by the whole flash and pomp and circumstance of it.
And, you know, if you asked any of them honestly, you know, if they think he's like the best guitar player, their favorite, they'd probably say no. But he's the guy that made them want to play. You know, he's the guy.
He captured their
imagination. They saw that face and that Les Paul and the space guy. You know, they saw all that whole presentation and went, wow, I want to do this.
And he was part of the original four, the chemistry. You know, a lot of people, for example, bag on Ringo Starr as a drummer. Ringo's a great drummer for the Beatles.
Absolutely.
You know, the chemistry that he has with that band, you know.
100%.
I know for me, I got into Kiss, like I said earlier, in the 80s when Heaven's on Fire came out and Animalize. That's when I got it because of Paul Stanley. Mm. I got into 80s Kiss first. 80s Kiss is still my favorite era. People drag me through the mud for saying that all the time, but that's when I got it. Mm-hmm. And that's why I was a Paul guy, because in the 80s, Gene was a non-factor.
Right.
You know, there was not a Gene Simmons single from I Love It Loud in 82 all the way until 92 with Unholy. Mm-hmm. So that's why I always loved Paul Stanley to this day, because when I got into Kiss, he was the leader. He was the guy. I would look at the back of the albums. All of Paul's songs I automatically liked best. All Gene's songs, I didn't like them just because they were Gene's and I didn't even hear them yet.
Yeah, I could almost imagine that you maybe thought, why did they let the bass player sing some songs?
Well, I knew the legend of Kiss. I wasn't stupid, but I just got in 86 and then tracked myself backwards and was pleasantly surprised at how good Gene's songs were.
Like when he cared,
like Deuce and God of Thunder and all those other ones, right?
Yeah. And I saw Kiss 3-4 months ago.
Yeah.
And it was one of the best concerts I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I think that was is that the four guys have now, it's the perfect storm for me, because it's the great tunes and it's the great stage performance and it's the great musicianship.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think Tommy Thayer is an excellent guitar player.
Yes, agreed.
And I think he's like the best thing for the band, because he cops all of the style and the kind of the greasiness of Ace Frehley, but there's a little bit of tightness there.
He's got the proficiency.
Yes, and I think that for better or worse, as you know, we can all argue what is good and what is bad in music, because none of that even matters. Like it's all down
subjective,
to But I really thought it was an amazing concert. And I'm also starting to get a better appreciation for Gene's voice.
You were impressed with Gene.
I was blown away. To this day, his pitch and his tone and his presence as a singer and as a bass player is amazing. And it's one of those things that, like, you know, as we get older as musicians and we make more records, and this is true for all musicians, we start to see things differently, because we, with every album and with every tour, it's a learning process. Unless you're just blindly out there doing drugs and you're just living for yourself. If like if you're a real musician who cares about getting better, it's all a learning process, and you watch other players and you start to learn. Wow, and I just overlooked it, and I'm to this day, I have to say that I want to be in the Gene Simmons fan club, because it's not only that, but also he's a very smart man. And people always say, oh, he's this greedy, you know, capitalist, this and that. No, Gene is just a smart person. Like, I read his op-eds that he puts in these blog posts about, hey, I'm an immigrant and I came here. And listen, if you want to do well in this country, you can. And listen to my story. I'm not saying you can't be proud of your heritage, but be part of America. Learn to speak the language, and if you work hard, you'll be successful. I love that grassroots, like, just, you know, get your hands dirty, follow your dreams, work hard, and you'll do well. Like I said, he can't do anything wrong in my book right now.
Well, and that's why he is, I think, Paul and Gene. They both came, well, Gene came over as an immigrant, and Paul had nothing as a kid. If you read his book, he had a horrible childhood, messed up parents, and a mentally, I don't know if it's
sister,
challenged or insane or whatever, sister.
Yeah.
Plus, he had the horrible ear issues with the micropecia. He didn't even have ears. Yeah. He's deaf in one ear. To be able to be a musician of his caliber and a singer of his caliber, I think that's one of the reasons why they've got as far as they have and why they still want more, because they didn't have anything, and they were taught that from a very young age.
It's great to see, too, because they've been recharged as a band. You know, they're still wanting to do new records, and they've got a kick a kick in the pants with Paul and Tommy being just all fresh again. And the songwriting, it's more in-house, and it's more, they're more hungry. They still want to impress.
They're a better band now with Tommy and Eric probably 100%. Than they were even with Bruce and Eric.
I'm a revenge guy. I'm revenge if you held a gun to my head, which I hope nobody does. But if that, they had to ask me what my favorite I would say Revenge is my favorite record.
I say remember. That all the time.
Yeah, Revenge, we've talked about that. It's an amazing, and Paul's vocals are just ridiculous. You talk about Gene's vocals. Go back, and although it's not a great record per se, it's a great record, maybe not a great Kiss record, go back to Unmask and listen to Gene's vocals on that. Like on Naked City and stuff, just the obscure stuff, and go back and listen to his pipes, man. And that dude, on into the 80s, On the Crazy Nights record and on Hot in the Shade, all that stuff, that guy can sing.
It's funny too, because people always make fun of Gene going like, "Ugh!" But if you listen to like Fits Like a Glove or Young and Wasted, there's some high screams that he's doing.
Like on Naked City, on Unmasked, it's way out there, man.
And we were talking on the bus maybe last night or the night before about that melody in that verse. Sit down.
Oh, I love it loud, yeah.
Yeah. Like, I'm just talking about the rhythm.
The melody is over top of what they're playing.
It's amazing. Yeah, it's like great
it's
musicianship.
Rapping almost.
Yeah, it's one of those things. It's like when you have a great melody and a great rhythm on top of just like laying back over some really cool chord movements. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, like, again, it's one of those things that it's hard for a young kid who. In the 80s, we were all listening to Van Halen and Steve Vai, and there was all these gunslingers. And so I think you're looking like you and I always talk about like Dream Theater for young kids, like the pinnacle of like this. But
like Rush in the 70s.
That's right. Yeah. But it really comes down to Kiss and AC/DC. You know, it's like
just the groove,
bands who understand the foundation of rock and roll and build amazing songs that can make 20,000 people bob their head. Mm-hmm. And that is a skill.
Yeah. What do you think, Frank?
And Gene said something once that I thought was brilliant when he talked about the gunslinger type guitar players and the guys who can, you know, play so many notes a second or whatever. He said it's almost like watching somebody type 1,000 words a minute. It's impressive, but in the end, it doesn't really mean anything. Mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm. it's like a skill. It's just a skill, and it's like watching anybody do anything technical to this high level, but does it speak to you? You know, does it mean anything?
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
Remember he said that one thing? It's like a, what do you say?
Angry Bee.
Angry
Bee. Yeah.
Shoot it.
On Unmasked or something. Yeah, it was like, you know, and that's why, like, when Bruce came into the band, it was like, he had the melodic and the great rhythm playing and the great riffs, but he could also play fast.
Yeah.
But he also knew when to hold back and when not to play and when to play and live.
There's
even
no
more
doubt
so.
That Bruce Kulick is the underrated guy in the entire Kiss catalog.
That dude's a bad.
Vinnie Vincent is a songwriter, but Bruce Kulick as a player is very forgotten, underrated, especially since Kiss doesn't play too many songs from the 80s in their set.
Yeah,
exactly.
That's why I like that they played Hide Your Heart this tour, because it's the one representation of a Bruce Kulick era.
Right. Great
era
solo.
I know you're a fan of Bruce, Rich.
I love him. And I think that's part of that era that's similar to the new Kiss, is that Gene and Paul, I think they're much more effective leaders and musicians when they've got a team together where everything is firing together. And anytime there's that turmoil, I think those guys, you could probably look back at the history of Kiss, and any time that there's that tension and there's that just that discourse in the band, they're not making as good albums. You know?
Yeah, you're right. I agree, especially when you can see that when Paul and Gene were at each other's throats in the 80s. You could tell that there was a lot of disconnect, and also too, Psycho Circus is like that. That record's a mess as well when the band got together and realized they didn't really have what they did have before.
Yeah.
What do you guys think about Eric and Tommy being in Ace and Peter's makeup and kind of just being, you know, we still have the four characters on stage, but it's different people playing them?
Honestly, it doesn't really bother me too much. I can understand why it would bother the people involved.
Like Eddie Trunk just hates it.
Right. Really? Yeah, see, it doesn't bother me because it's been so long, and the you know, It'd be one thing if they were trying to pass them off as, you know, as Peter or Ace.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Trying to fool everybody.
Exactly.
Right?
It's like, no, that's Peter back there. No. I mean, that would be different. But
it's
they're
Ed
not.
Cannon playing drums. Yeah. No, it's Peter. Yeah.
I mean, the way the kind of the way they've tried to present themselves is the band, the makeup, the characters, all that stuff. They've always said is bigger than the people involved. You know what I mean? And, you know, Gene and Paul are going to step aside at some point, and they're going to try to, you know, have
there
the band.
Will be an official Kiss that's
yes.
not have that, yeah, after Gene and Paul are gone, I'm sure.
Exactly. So they've always made it clear that the mythos and the characters, they're iconic, and it's bigger than the people involved. So I can understand from maybe Peter and Ace's perspective and certain fans' perspective, but it doesn't personally bother me because they're honest about it. It's not like they're trying to pull one over on anybody.
You've got the Catman tattoo.
Yes, Catman.
Yes. Tell me.
Yeah, I've got the Catman, which is a character, which is a persona, you know, that they portray. You know, that doesn't mean Eric Singer's Catman when he's not in makeup or he's not doing his thing, you know. And I like Frank said, I just could see from Ace and Peter's point of view where it definitely would be disheartening to see someone else in a mm-hmm. in a persona that you know come up with. But at the same time, you know, like you said, Kiss is an entity and people want to see a show, and personally it doesn't bother me.
I think this too, if it wasn't that way, there would be no Kiss right now, because I don't think the four guys could get along.
No.
And that makes people mad, but that's the way that it is. It's the way that it goes. They're a better band with those guys that way. And if they didn't do it, it wouldn't happen. You know, and another thing too is that Peter and Ace sold those characters to Paul and Gene.
Exactly.
Peter sold his, and as Ace said on this very podcast, he leases his image to the band.
Yep. Yeah.
So once you do that, game over.
Yeah, you can't complain that they use something that you've sold to them or
right.
that you lease to them. You know, it's like if it meant that much to you, hold on to it. No, I mean, it's like, yeah, they went through financial hard times, whatever. I don't know the story. But if it was that valuable, you don't sell it.
Yeah.
You hold on to it.
And we're sitting at a table with four professional musicians who have done this the majority of our lives. And when you're on stage with people that you don't like,
yes.
you're essentially faking it with the audience.
Yep.
You can see that. Yes.
They know it.
And it is disrespectful to everyone who buys a ticket to go up there and cash that check every night when there's no chemistry and it's not a band anymore. You're playing songs with people you dislike.
That's right.
And I won't do it anymore. So I completely understand from Gene and Paul's position. And then the argument would be, well, then don't call it Kiss and then don't do this. But listen, they spent their entire lives building a brand. And you're going to ask them to walk away from it because they're...
That's a great point, especially with Paul Stanley, who spent his entire life. And in the 80s, when his partner gave up, Kiss is Paul Stanley's band. End of story. Whoever Paul Stanley wants in that band that he feels is viable plays in the band. Now, you can be a purist and say, well, I just don't like the fact they're wearing Ace and Peter makeup. For the Kiss brand, if I go to a show as a fan, I want to see the four guys.
Yeah.
I don't care if it's Tommy playing or if it's Rich Ward or if it's Kent Slusher or anybody. It's the four guys in Kiss, and that's who I want to see. And I think that's the way they've done it. And it obviously hasn't hurt them because they still do great business, and people know that's not Ace Frehley. And if they don't know, they don't care.
Right.
Go ahead. I
was just going to say, you know, there's an attitude that some people have just in general that, some people just make way too much money. Okay, well, if you pass some law that said they can't make any more than X amount, how does that benefit you, you know?
Right.
So it kind of, you know, you could kind of say, all right, well, you know, Kiss shouldn't, you know, they shouldn't use Ace and Peter's characters or whatever. They should do something else. And even, you know, Ace and Peter may say that, but it doesn't benefit. How does that benefit you now? You know, it's like you're in the same position. You know, your position doesn't change. And in fact, it's better for you that they're keeping the legend alive. They're keeping the band alive. They're keeping the brand alive. That benefits you.
It
keeps the spotlight on you. Without it.
That's true.
You still
have that Ace Frehley makeup or that Peter Criss makeup. And plus, I am happier in a world where Kiss is in it.
Right.
Same way that, as horrible as it is that Malcolm Young can't play in AC/DC anymore.
Yeah. Right.
I'm so glad that they're going out with with Stevie Young as his replacement, because AC/DC still exists. We can still go see AC/DC, and the spirit lives on.
Right, right.
You know, I think that's very important.
And it's kind of a tribute to Malcolm and the body of work that he's laid down.
And this
is
a tribute to Kiss, the body of work that they laid down in the 70s.
I love what you just said. The world is better with Kiss in it.
Yes,
it is.
It is absolutely true. You couldn't have said it better. The world is better with Kiss and AC/DC and ZZ Top and, you know, Aerosmith. We need those bands. Mm-hmm. It's a part of our upbringing and a part of our culture.
That's
right. They've done so much. And it's, again, when Kiss came through Atlanta, there were 20,000 people sold out sitting in there.
3 months ago.
Unbelievable. And there was 19,999 smiles in that audience.
Absolutely.
And one passed out chick.
Yeah. She passed out by, like, shouted out loud. She was done.
By deuce.
Yeah.
I mean, you think about Elvis. Elvis passed away 37 years ago, you know?
Yeah.
And yet, in a way, because of the branding, because of of everything behind it, he still lives on, you know, and people can enjoy
the impersonators.
People are able to enjoy what he's done. Would the world be a better place if somebody put their foot down and said, no, the man's dead. Now everything he's done is
never
dead.
Can we see him
never
again.
Never can we see him in any capacity.
When you go to an Elvis impersonator, a good one, it's awesome.
Pretty,
it's like going to
amazing.
See Beatlemania, right. Like a good Beatles tribute. It's like you can't say, well, this isn't the real Elvis. I'm not going to enjoy this.
Right.
It's the same thing. Or even the Michael Jackson hologram they did at the Grammys this year.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was really cool. And I guarantee at some point there will be a Michael Jackson tour with a Michael Jackson hologram. Mm-hmm. And you're going to go and you're going to go, this is awesome.
I'm having my hologram made for Fozzy as we speak.
Oh, my God.
Just stay home and collect the royalties. All right, Frank, I'm going to ask you a question.
Yes.
We always laugh about this, and I always say that you're an idiot savant.
Savant, not an idiot.
I was waiting for you to say that. So we're talking about Kiss Meets the Phantom of the Park. Obviously, it's a really funny movie if you haven't seen it. And it's one of those ones where everybody gets one line. Like, hey, what are you doing? What's going on?
Mm-hmm.
So there's one speech that Paul Stanley has, or actually four lines or five lines put together. And this is when the two cops are discussing something at the pool, and Paul can hear it because he's got his super hypnotic super eye. Can hear what the guys are saying. So what's he saying, Star Child?
Well, first of all, the movie was an NBC Saturday Night Movie of the Week. It premiered on October 28th, 1978.
Did you watch it?
Oh, God, yeah.
You watched
it
live.
I was planted in front of the TV. I couldn't wait.
Unbelievable. His first masturbation.
Yeah. What's happening in my pants?
Boy, was he disappointed.
So,
the second was Piper.
Yeah. So, of course, the two security guards working the graveyard shift are attacked by the Gene Simmons robot clone. And so the next day they're going to try to arrest him while they're sitting around the pool. And the guy who owns or runs the park is trying to get the police to back off because they still got to do their concert because these guys bring in $200,000 a show. And Paul's listening in with his Star Child eye, which is kind of like the $6 million man's eye, but he can hear through it somehow. And he says,
What's he saying, Star Child?
He's convinced you did it, but the investigation's a stroke. He just wants the guy off his back. He's sweating the possibility that we'll pull out. He's just plain sweating.
Oh, dude, you just took me back. I could visualize the scene and the whole thing. They're in the robes and the whole deal.
Yeah, sitting on giant lifeguard chairs wearing robes.
But I couldn't, not for the life of me. I remember the
you're visual, looking for someone, but it's not Kiss.
What do you compute, Space Ace?
Insufficient data at the moment, Star Child.
Yeah. All right, James. That was James Bond.
I'm E-Bucko, and with a scurvy crew steaming close behind, and I do mean steaming.
And that wasn't even Peter Criss's voice.
I know. That was the voice actor.
I watched Scooby-Doo with my kids, and that guy is all over Scooby-Doo. So, that's the Peter Criss voice.
That's amazing.
I think there's one or two lines that Peter actually is his voice, maybe two lines in the entire movie that's actually his voice.
Yeah, he was completely checked out, him and Ace both at that time, weren't they?
Talk about just getting a total bum steer on that movie. Like, they convinced him it was going to be something great, and it just was bad. But Paul's got the most distinctive voice ever.
Oh, yeah.
What's the Edmund Newman thing? What do you say? Like, would you make love to a woman
with your makeup on?
It wasn't Edwin Newman. It was an English thing where they were touring England for the first time, like in 75.
Don't correct the
host. Yeah, sorry.
Just go with him. Try to do improv with you here.
And the guy asked, you know, if the...
Let me just say this about the eighth time I've given that cue over the last month, and he blows it every time.
I blow it every time.
If you could say a line without blowing it,
that was a take. You know, the guy asked Paul if girls, you know, if you do it with them after the show with the makeup on, and Paul says, if they desire.
They desire. They had the total Brooklyn accent back in those days.
Unbelievable.
Just the incredible, just like the fact that the mainstream America always tried to pin them down and get them to talk normally, but they always stayed in character when they were being interviewed back in those days.
Yeah, but that movie didn't hurt Kiss, just like the Star Wars Christmas special didn't hurt Star Wars. You know what I mean? It's like you're allowed at least one get out of jail free card.
What was the movie with the Bee Gees?
Oh, Sergeant Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band.
Was it that? But there was another one.
Well, that one was awful.
That
too.
One was awful was too. Brutal. But there was another one.
Peter
with the
Frampton
Bee Gees
was in that. Aerosmith.
Oh yeah,
terrible stuff.
Pretty bad. So you know, it wasn't just Kiss. Everybody was kind of getting dealt a. Well, interesting hand.
I'd be in a crappy movie if they paid me good.
Dude, I'd do one now.
one of the great things about, you know, Kiss coming up in the 70s was the fact that it wasn't the media culture and the social media culture that we have today. So seeing them on TV was just like a shock.
Right.
You know, you could see them in magazines and print in two dimensions, but seeing them like on the TV screen and speaking was just like... You know, hearing their speaking voices, I remember, was just like, I don't know, it's just this amazing feeling.
Because you never, like Rich said, they look so evil or so space, you know, supernatural, but they had normal music and normal voices.
Right.
And that was kind of like, wow, they're humans, they talk.
You could be watching TV
accents.
And like a commercial for the Kiss dolls or the Kiss, you know,
Kiss,
whatever.
Now if that's the game, Kiss, they look insane, Kiss, if rock's your game, it's Kiss.
Get the Kiss dolls, 12 inches.
Now available at Remco for $14.95.
Now from Miko.
Now from Miko. After every one of those, there was the fonts, right? And then a 20-minute refractory period.
I would be like one of those Super Bowl things that, you know, you throw it and it just goes boing, 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 boing off every wall. That was me. If they came on TV, literally had to be, like, restrained, you know?
Well, I remember just recently.
Franklin, sit down.
When they did the show from Dodger Stadium, the Psycho Circus.
The reunion tour.
The reunion. That was the Halloween night. They did the
reunion,
Psycho Circus.
After the reunion?
Yeah.
The bridge?
I can't remember. They did something from Dodger Stadium. I think it was a Psycho Circus thing on Halloween night.
That was the 3D. Smashing Pumpkins were opening for
him. Yes, Kenny Aronoff playing drums.
Yeah, and that was the opening of the Psycho Circus tour.
Kenny Aronoff played drums for the
Smashing
Pumpkins?
Yes,
he did.
He's
played
on
drums
that tour.
For everybody.
Yeah.
I think he's actually the Catman on
this
tour.
It was killer, too. But I remember tuning in. No, I was not. But you could listen to the feed on the radio.
Tell him how impactful that Kiss...
When they were on the MTV Music Awards.
Yeah, under the bridge.
Yeah, we were playing.
Brooklyn Bridge.
That was a good story. Rich,
when they made their announcement.
Well, Rich and I were playing in Stuck Mojo at the time when they actually reunited and got back together. So, like, on that tour that he and I were on, like, the news, you know, everybody was talking about the Kiss reunion tour. Mm-hmm. And we were playing some club, and they had the TVs on in the club, and they were playing the MTV Video Music Awards, and Kiss was on it, and they were, like, the last act, you know, and it was the thing from under the Brooklyn Bridge. Mm-hmm. And the band that was opening for us were on stage at the time, and as soon as it came on TV, everyone in the club turned away from the stage and was watching Kiss on TV to the point where the band stopped playing.
They stopped in the middle of their set,
and the entire club sat there watching Kiss on the TV because it was the first time they'd been, you know, it was their big coming out thing.
How big of an event it was.
It was
like,
massive.
There was a live band on
it. Massive.
Everyone stopped and
you know,
turned.
Yes, there was a live band packed club, and literally the band had to stop because no one was paying attention.
We played the gig in Calgary during the Stanley Cup playoffs.
Yeah, well, how do you compete with that?
And then listen to this. Everyone's cheering, and Calgary's going to win. It's 4-3, and with 6 seconds left, Vancouver scores to tie it up. And the entire crowd was like, ah, ooh.
And you ran off stage
pissed.
I was
pissed. So mad.
Oh,
and you
disappeared. No.
We're like, is the show over?
No. You know,
that was the equivalent.
You know,
Jazz Odyssey.
You know what, too, is like on that with the reunion tour, that was obviously a huge moment. But even bigger than that, another plus to seeing that tour was three shows. It was either two or three shows. Alice in Chains opened up those shows.
Yeah, yeah.
And I got to see the second show in Louisville, Kentucky with Alice in Chains opening up. So I got to see Lane.
Wow.
With Alice in Chains.
That's one thing with Kiss, too. They always, up until now, they always had really great openers of up-and-coming bands. You know, like you mentioned Alice in Chains or Smashing Pumpkins. Or if you go to the 80s, it was Dokken and Anthrax and
Night Ranger, who went on to be
Night Ranger.
Yeah.
I saw Crocus.
I got a rock.
I've seen, wow.
There was Rush and ZZ Top and Ted Nugent and Blue Oyster Cult and Motley Crue.
And Piper.
So many.
Piper.
The first time I saw him was a band called That Piper Band with Billy Squire. And then the second time I saw him on the Dynasty Tour in 79 was a band called New England, who I haven't heard from since.
So you're really blowing my theory out of the water.
Sorry.
My Crocus on the Animalized Tour, it was a bit of a fool. Although I thought Crocus was really good.
They were good.
Headhunter Tour.
Absolutely.
That was their peak.
I do have that one little bit of history that I saw the very first show they ever played in the United States without makeup. On the Lick It Up tour.
Yeah. Really?
It was the first show. They had played in Europe, and then they came back overseas. I found this out subsequently. I didn't know it at the time. But they played at the Omni, and that was the first show of the Lick It Up tour. Yeah. And they went on like 3 hours late.
Wow. They're probably scared. I can't do it.
I mean, I remember like the whole crowd, such as it was outside, like looking through, and you could see like the stage was barely even set up. I mean, it was like the door should have been open, and they were just like way behind.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well, you know, what's funny is that when Lick It Up came out, I thought that Vinnie Vincent was Ace Frehley. If you look at the cover, he kind of looks the same.
Sort of resembles him.
Kind of a little bit like Chinese eyes, same hair, same kind of look. I thought, oh, Ace Frehley, that's him.
Yeah.
And I said, I don't know who that guy is. And that's Paul Stanley. And that's
I got Paul Stanley and Gene mixed up, I think. Or no, not
Gene.
Well, Gene had the tongue.
When I saw Eric, I thought it was Paul.
I knew Gene, obviously, but the other three, I was like, who's
It was weird. It's like,
and even that in the '70s, the fact that they were able to keep their identities secret.
Yeah,
you know, I remember they always had like napkins or like a Cream magazine. They would show like, you know, just half, and then Ace was a couple years later before you saw him without makeup.
Yeah, it was like 87 before he like kind of revealed himself.
I saw Ace on the Frehley's Comet tour.
Yeah, I did too.
White Lion opened up.
I saw that tour.
Did you see that tour?
Center Stage Theater,
which we just played the other day.
Yep.
All right,
beautiful.
Final question. Favorite Kiss album and favorite Kiss song? And for you guys, I want your favorite obscure one as well. But Rich, favorite Kiss album, favorite Kiss song?
I'm going to go with Animalize as my favorite record. I know that's unpopular. I'm probably going to lose a tooth over it.
Scott Ian hears it.
Yeah, and I love that record because that was like the record that it hit me at that time in my teenage years when I was like, and I thought the guitar playing was amazing, the production I loved at the time, but my favorite Kiss song to this day will always be Dr. Love. I think it hits all the checks all the boxes for me.
Yeah. All right, Frank?
Favorite song would be Detroit Rock City off of Destroyer. Because I just love the extra orchestration, even though that's not really what they were about.
But at that record, they expanded to that.
But yeah, it was to me, it was a perfect blend of just their brand of down and dirty rock, but with those extra little elements. Like you can hear like the grand piano chords with the guitars in there. And I mean, yeah, I just love that song. And I think it's one of their best written songs. And I think favorite album would probably be Rock and Roll Over.
Okay.
And
favorite obscure song?
Probably Mr. Speed off of Rock and Roll Over.
That's an obscure. That's a good one.
Man. Totally.
Kent?
You know what? From a drumming perspective, one of my favorite songs, my favorite record is Revenge.
Yeah.
I think I said that earlier. One of my favorite songs is obscure as well. Saint and Sinner off of Creatures of the Night.
Wow.
I think that's a ridiculous song.
Great.
All the way to there's somewhere on YouTube or something you can get the isolated drum track.
Oh wow!
With Eric Carr's drum track, and it's
his drums on Creatures.
It's slamming, man. Very big. And Heart of Chrome as well off
of
Revenge.
Heart of Chrome,
the ascending drum fill.
I don't even know that one.
Pretty amazing. And Paul was just ridiculous on that whole.
Yeah, Revenge is my favorite. I love Heart of Chrome. I love Room Service.
Yeah, that's a good one.
I'm going to throw Gene a bone. From watching Animalize, Fits Like a Glove is a great damn tune.
That's a rocking song.
They should put that back into the live set again.
Young and Wasted.
Young and Wasted. Yep. This is about getting crazy and loving it.
Can I put my theory out there?
What's your theory?
My theory is...
Dead Man?
No. You know how Kiss was like an enormously popular band, but always hated by the critics.
Right.
I have a theory that if they had done exactly what they had done, except didn't wear makeup and had just dressed like the opposite of what they wanted to do, had been
like
four slobs walking on stage who needed a shave, I believe that they wouldn't have been nearly as popular, but they would have been the critics' darling. If they'd have done nothing different except they hadn't worn makeup and worn costumes, the critics would have thought they were the greatest band that ever walked the earth, but they would have had a medium-sized follower.
MC5.
Exactly. They would have been the MC5, exactly.
Yeah, I could see that. Yeah.
I think the image is what captured so many imaginations and what turned a lot of people against them right off the bat and probably didn't even give them a shot. I mean, we go through that quite often with Fozzy, too.
Yeah.
I'm sure you go with it with Luke Bryan, a lot of people who don't like country. I went to a Luke Bryan concert, and it was one of the funnest shows I've ever been to in my life. I've never been to a country show because it's country.
Right.
It's just as much of a rock show as
an arena rock show.
You're rocking up there just like, you know, Eric Singer would be or Tommy Lee or whatever. Yeah. Frank, one last thing. Spotlight on you.
Yes.
I go into a hotel lobby, and I got a baby that I think is Gene's. Tell me the story, Paul. What happened? What happened today at the hotel?
Girl comes up to me in the hotel and she says, "I'm looking for Gene." I say, "What?" She says, "I'm looking for Gene." I say, "Gene's over there." Excuse me. I'm trying to remember the rest of it.
She
said, "There's the man with the tongue."
Yeah. Say, "Hey, Paul, what you doing with that pistol in your pants?"
And she, in her arms, she's got a little baby.
"I'd like you to meet your little child."
Boom, boom, boom. And
I said to her, "Not only is that not his little baby, but he's never seen you before in his life."
Love it.
Detroit, let me tell you something. Just between me and you, that baby had the longest tongue I've ever seen in my life.
Illegitimate children jokes. Yes, we love the 80s.
Frank, thanks. You are amazing, sir.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Merry Christmas. All right. Thanks to all of you for listening on this fine day. Thanks to Fozzy drummer Frank Fonseray, my partner in crime Rich Ward, also from Fozzy, and Kent Slucher from Luke Bryan's band, pounding up the skins for the biggest name in country music, also a huge Kiss fan, as you heard. You guys know how much I love Kiss, how much Kiss has influenced this podcast, how many of the members have been on the show, and now you guys know two more major Kiss fanatics, maybe even bigger than me, Frank and Kent, and I think we made a Kiss fanatic out of Rich Ward. Like I said, being on the Kiss Cruise definitely put Rich into the Kiss Army, but this was pre-Kiss Cruise, and I think we made a pretty good case for ourselves, and that's case with a K. Thanks again for being here. Thanks again to Amazon, the longest-running sponsor of Talk is Jericho, and the easiest way to support the show, just use the Talk is Jericho links. You can find them by going to podcast1.com, kicking on the Killer Deals button in the top right-hand corner of the page, then hitting the Talk is Jericho button. I got Amazon links for the USA, the UK, the Canada, A. Every time you use them Talk is Jericho links, Amazon kicks back a small percentage of the show to help us cover production costs. I know you did your holiday shopping. Holidays are done. Christmas is done, but you can still buy stuff. I'm sure you got lots of gift cards from Amazon or from all the different places, and you still might want to buy a couple extra gifts with the money that you received. If you guys got a lot of money for Christmas rather than asking for presents, you can buy anything you want. You can do anything you want to do. Go to podcast1.com. Click on the Killer Deals button in the top right-hand corner of the page, then hit the Talk is Jericho button, and do what you got to do and help out this show in the process, okay? Thank you so much for being here. Don't forget to stick around to hear the 60-second AP News update coming up next. But other than that, stay hard, stay hungry, peace, love, and hugs. I hope you guys had a great Christmas. I hope Santa brought you everything you wanted. I hope you enjoyed the show. We're going to end off this year with a high note as next Wednesday, I got the Sklar Brothers, all right? Funny, funny guys. Huge podcast in their own right. They were gracious enough to invite me on their show. I'm returning the favor. Hilarious guys.
comedic twins. They got some great stories about their life being comics in Hollywood, being twins, working with Andrew Dice Clay, and I guess he was not very nice to them. So there's some stories about that. Lots of great stuff coming up on Wednesday with the Sklar Brothers. We will see you then. Once again, go enjoy the rest of your Christmas. Have a great holiday and a big yeah, boy. Ho, 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 ho. Merry Christmas.
Oh, yeah, people. Merry Christmas. Yeah. Woo.
Buddy Veal, what's your favorite color?
You can download new episodes of Talk is Jericho every Wednesday and Friday at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.
Good night.
Okay, keep your eyes closed.
Okay.
I want to show you my first ever painting.
All right.
Okay. Open your eyes.
Oh, that's a lot of colors and shapes.
So be honest. What do you think?
Well, I like how if you switch to Geico, you could save hundreds of dollars on car insurance.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Here, why don't I hold your paintbrush while you call them?
Geico, because saving 15% or more on car insurance is always a great answer.
It's your last chance to get great holiday savings at Guitar Center. Like a Yamaha portable keyboard, only $79. Add a month of lessons for only $99. Plus the newest and hottest guitars, drums, keys, and more. Exclusive gear you can't get anywhere else. Special financing and gift cards, the perfect present for every musician. So hurry in and find your sound at Guitar Center. Lessons available at select locations only.
Trump's victory. I'm Ed Donahue with an AP News Minute.
It's always a lot of fun when you win. If you work hard and lose, that's not acceptable.
At the White House, President Trump welcomed Republicans from the House and the Senate who passed a bill overhauling the tax code. The president says the middle class will be seeing the effects of this bill very soon.
The typical family of four earning $75,000 will see an income tax cut of more than $2,000. They're going to have $2,000, and that's, in my opinion, going to be less than the average. You're going to have a lot more than that.
The tax overhaul bill also includes a corporate tax cut.
We have companies pouring back into our country, and that means jobs, and it means really the formation of new, young, beautiful, strong companies.
Democrats have criticized the tax package as a giveaway to corporations and the rich. The tax cuts for businesses are permanent under this tax bill, but reductions for individuals and families will expire after a decade. I'm Ed Donahue.